however long ago when we left off, we were in 1 Kings chapter 8, and we stopped at verse 22. And the first part of this chapter had to do with the finishing or the conclusion of the construction of the temple. And in that little section there, Solomon speaks about how God kept his promise to David that his son would sit on his throne and build a house for God. So, and that's covered also in 2 Chronicles 5, 2 through 14, and 2 Chronicles 6, 1 through 11. So, having said all that, which wasn't much, we'll get back into verse 20. We'll read verse 22. And Solomon stood before the altar of the Lord in the presence of all the congregation of Israel and spread forth his hand toward heaven. Now, I think it's right here. Between verses 22 and 23 in 2 Chronicles chapter 6, if you hold your place in Kings, there's just one little verse here. In between 22 and 23, chapter 6, verse 13. In verse 12, it just reiterates what it said in Kings, where he stood before the altar of the Lord in the presence of all the congregation of Israel, spread forth his hands. For Solomon had made a brazen scaffold of 5 cubits long, 5 cubits broad, and 5 cubits high, and had set it in the midst of the court. And upon it he stood and kneeled down upon his knees before all the congregation of Israel and spread forth his hands toward heaven. So, you know, in Kings, it doesn't tell you that, but, you know, he's before the whole congregation in the temple, and they built a scaffold. They built a platform that would be approximately 7.5 by 7.5 by 4.5 feet high. So that's a decent size. If you remember in, what is it, in Nehemiah or Esther, wherever it is, where they come back to Israel and they go before the water gate. And it says they stood on a platform. I think it says a pulpit. But anyway, because obviously if they want to speak to people, they didn't have electronic amplification. So they had to project their voices. And if they were at the same level as the people wouldn't hear them. So, back to Kings. Verse 23. And he said, now this is Solomon's prayer at the dedication of the temple. And he said, Lord God of Israel, there is no God like thee in heaven above or on earth beneath, who keepest covenant and mercy with thy servants that walk before thee with all their heart. And I think that's significant because with all their heart, you know, he makes a point of that. Who has kept with thy servant David, my father, that thou hast promised him. Thou speakest also with thy mouth and hast fulfilled it with thine hand as it is this day. And of course, that's a figure of speech, right? God doesn't have a mouth. He doesn't have a hand. But it communicates to the people that God spoke it and he fulfilled it. Therefore now, Lord God of Israel, keep with thy servant David, my father, that thou promised him, saying, there shall not fail thee a man in my sight to sit on the throne of Israel, so that thy children take heed to their way, that they walk before me as thou hast walkest before me. And now, O God of Israel, let thy word, I pray thee, be verified, which thou spakest unto thy servant David, my father. But will God indeed dwell on the earth? Behold, the heavens, the heaven and the heaven of heavens cannot contain thee. How much less this house that I have builded. So he's just recognizing, you know, the greatness of God. Obviously, no house or building can contain God. But God is a spirit. So, anyway. Yet have thou respect unto the prayer of thy servant and to his supplication. O Lord my God, to hearken unto thy cry and to thy prayer, which thy servant prayeth before thee today, that thine eyes may be opened toward this house night and day. This house would be Israel, right? And the house that he built, the temple. Even toward the place of which thou hast said, my name shall be there, that thou mayest hearken unto the prayer which thy servant shall make toward this place. You know, the temple was kind of the focal point of their spiritual life, or, you know, their religious life, at any rate. Everything revolved around it. And, you know, even when they went other places, like in Daniel, it says he faced Jerusalem to pray, which is where the temple was, which they equated with the presence of God, because the Holy of Holies was there. And hearken thou to the supplication of thy servant and of thy people Israel, when they shall pray toward this place. And hear thou in heaven thy dwelling place, and when thou hearest, forgive. If any man trespass against thy neighbor, and an oath be laid upon him to cause him to swear, and the oath come before thine altar in this house, then hear thou in heaven and do, and judge thy servants, condemning the wicked to bring his way upon his head, and justifying the righteous to give him according to his righteousness. So he's praying, you know, for the justness of God to prevail. And when the people of Israel be smitten down before the enemy, because they have sinned against thee, and shall turn again to thee, and confess thy name, and pray, and make supplication unto thee in this house, then hear thou in heaven, and forgive the sin of thy people Israel, and bring them again into the land which thou gavest unto their fathers. So, he's recognizing, of course, that they are going to make some mistakes. So he's just, you know, going before God and saying, okay, God, this is probably going to happen, but you can forgive them when they turn back to you. Which was kind of foretold in Deuteronomy. You know, and other places when Moses wrote and foretold of things. Verse 35. When heaven is shut up and there is no rain because they have sinned against thee, if they pray toward this place and confess thy name and turn from their sin when thou afflictest them, then hear thou in heaven and forgive the sin of thy servants and of thy people Israel, that thou teach them the good way wherein they should walk, and give rain upon the land which thou hast given to thy people for an inheritance. So, and remember, you know, when they first went into the promised land, one of the things that God promised them was that they would have rain, and they would have, you know, a fertile land that was fruitful and you know, all that stuff. If there be in the land famine, if there be pestilence, blasting mildew, locust, or if there be a caterpillar, if their enemy besiege them in the land of their cities, whatsoever plague, whatsoever sickness there be, what prayer and supplication soever be made by any man or by all thy people Israel, which shall know every man the plague of his own heart and spread forth his hand toward this house, then hear thou in heaven thy dwelling place and forgive and do, and give to every man according to his ways whose heart thou knowest. For thou, even thou only, knowest the hearts of all the children of men. What a great thing, you know, he just recognized that God knows the hearts of men. And he really saw that with God and David, his father, because what did God say? God said that David was a man after his own heart. Then it goes on, verse 40, that they may fear thee in all days that they live in the land which thou gavest unto our fathers. Moreover, concerning a stranger that is not of thy people Israel, but cometh out of a far country for thy name's sake. You know, if foreigners come because they've heard about God and they want to know him. For they shall hear of thy great name and of thy strong hand and of thy stretched out arm. When he shall come and pray toward this house, hear thou in heaven thy dwelling place and do according to all that the stranger calleth thee for. That all people of the earth may know thy name to fear thee as do thy people Israel, and that they may know that this house which I have builded is called by thy name. You know, this is kind of cool because it wasn't just Israel. If a Gentile wanted to come and worship God, then Solomon's prayer was if he comes to this temple and prays, that God should answer his prayer. You know, compare that to the Jews' attitudes during the gospel period, you know, or other periods even. I mean, they looked upon Gentiles as filth and dogs. Whereas, you know, if you look at the heart of God and the heart of the law, if somebody wanted to know God, they were to be welcoming and to help them learn. It's really cool. Which, of course, you know, later on, God opened it up to the Gentiles. Okay, verse 44. If thy people go out to battle against their enemy, whithersoever thou shalt send them, and shalt pray unto the Lord toward the city which thou hast chosen, and toward the house that I have built for thy name, then hear thou in heaven their prayer and their supplication, and maintain their cause. If they sin against thee, for there is no man that sinneth not. You know, you think about all have sinned and come short of the glory of God, right? In Romans. He says, for there is no man that sinneth not. And thou be angry with them, and deliver them to the enemy, so that they carry them away captive into the land of the enemy, far or near. Yet if they shall bethink themselves in the land whither they were carried captives, and repent, and make supplication unto thee in the land of them that carried them captive, saying, we have sinned and have done perversely, we have committed wickedness, and so return unto thee with all their heart and with all their soul in the land of their enemies, which led them away captive, and pray unto thee toward their land, which thou gavest unto their fathers, the city which thou hast chosen, and the house which I have built for thy name, then hear thou their prayer and their supplication in heaven and in thy dwelling place, and maintain their cause. So here again, you know, he makes a point of if they turn back to God with all their heart and with all their soul. It wasn't, you know, a halfway thing. And forgive thy people that have sinned against thee and all their transgressions, wherein they have transgressed against thee. Give them compassion before them who carried them captive, that they may have compassion on them. Wow. So. For they be thy people, and thine inheritance, which thou hast brought us forth out of Egypt, from the midst of the furnace of iron, that thine eyes may be open unto the supplication of thy servant, and unto the supplication of thy people Israel, to hearken unto them in all that call for unto thee. So, you know, that's his prayer. Now, starting in verse 54, this is Solomon's blessing on the people, which is also interesting because he, as the leader, the king, and the man of God for this country, is blessing the people. You know, there's places in, like in Philippians, where God, Paul, you know, says, bless your people for giving, or for doing this, or for doing that. So here, he's giving a blessing. And it was so, verse 54, when Solomon had made an end of praying all this prayer and supplication unto the Lord, he arose from before the altar of the Lord from kneeling on his knees with his hands spread up to heaven. And he stood and blessed all the congregation of Israel with a loud voice, saying, now remember, he's on that scaffold, right? He's standing up now. And it must have been an imposing sight. Blessed be the Lord that hath given rest unto the people, his people Israel, according to all that he promised. There hath not failed one word of all his good promise, which he promised by the hand of Moses, his servant. Now that's a pretty cool verse when you think about it. He said, blessed, or, you know, praise be the Lord that hath given rest unto his people, Israel, according to all that he promised. There hath not failed one word of all his good promise, which he promised by the hand of Moses, his servant. Now, wherever there was a failure, it wasn't God, it was Israel. You know, there were times when they turned against God. There were times when they sinned, when they turned to idols. There were times when they doubted God, you know, whatever. But God, on his part, not one word failed of his promises. Pretty incredible. The Lord our God be with us as he was with our fathers. Let him not leave us nor forsake us, that he may incline our hearts unto him to walk in all his ways and keep his commandments and his statutes and his judgments, which he commanded our fathers. We went over that, commandments and statutes and judgments. That all has to do, you know, in total, that's the law, right? The Old Testament law, the Old Testament word contained all those different aspects, commandments, statutes, and judgments. And let these my words wherewith I have made supplication before the Lord be nigh unto the Lord our God day and night, that he maintain the cause of his servant and the cause of his people Israel at all times as the matter shall require, that all people of the earth may know that the Lord is God and that there is none else. Let your heart therefore be perfect with the Lord our God to walk in his statute and to keep his commandments as at this day. So that was his blessing on the children of Israel. He blessed all the congregation, and he did it by revelation. You know, God gave him the words to speak. He spoke the words accordingly. And then 61, it was an exhortation. Let your heart be perfect with the Lord our God to walk in his statutes and to keep his commandments as at this day. That's an exhortation, an encouragement to walk. And the king and all Israel with him offered sacrifice before the Lord. So that, you know, that was really the end of the dedication as far as the oration and the prayers. And it says, and Solomon offered a sacrifice of peace offerings, which he offered unto the Lord, 22,000 oxen and 120,000 sheep. So the king and all the children of Israel dedicated the house of the Lord. Now, they didn't just kill him, they ate him. You know, they had a big feast. They, you know, it was a joyful time. The same day did the king hallow the middle of the court that was before the house of the Lord, for there he offered burnt offerings and meat offerings and fat of the peace offerings, because the brazen altar that was before the Lord was too little to receive the burnt offerings and meat offerings and the fat of the peace offerings. And at that time Solomon held a feast, and all Israel with him, a great congregation from the entering in of Hamath unto the river of Egypt before the Lord our God, 7 days and 7 days, even 14 days. On the eighth day he sent the people away, and they blessed the king and went into their tents joyful and glad of heart for all the goodness that the Lord had done for David his servant and for Israel his people. Wow, that must have been a party. 14 days. All of Israel. The whole land. Quite a thing. But you could see that at this point in time, Solomon's really locked in. We read about his wisdom, how people came from all over to see him, and now we're going to see some more about that. Chapter 9, verse 1. And it came to pass, when Solomon had finished the building of the house of the Lord, and the king's house, and all Solomon's desire, which he was pleased to do. So this is chapter 9, and this is paralleled in 2 Chronicles 7, 7:12 through 22. And it says that the Lord appeared to Solomon the second time as he had appeared unto him at Gibeon. Remember, the first time he appeared unto Solomon at Gibeon is where he appeared to him in a dream and he said, "What would you want from me?" And Solomon said, "I want a wise heart so that I can discern and judge thy people justly." And God said, "Well, because you asked for wisdom, I will give you, because you didn't ask for riches or power, I'll give you that wisdom, but I'll also enrich you in every other way." So this is the second time that God has appeared to him. Now, it says in John that no man has seen God at any time, right? And it says that, for instance, Moses spoke to God face to face. Well, when it says God appeared, usually it was like a cloud or a light or something. You know, it wasn't, you know, like a crystal clear picture of God, right? But, you know, he would hear him audibly or whatever, God would communicate. So, verse 3, "And the Lord said unto him, I have heard thy prayer and thy supplication that thou hast made before me. I have hallowed this house, which thou hast built to put my name there forever, and mine eyes and mine heart shall be there perpetually. And if, here's the big if. This is really important because this promise, just as it was to David previously in Samuel, is a promise that is conditional, right? It's if. So he says, "And if thou wilt walk before me as David thy father walked." And here again, we see that David is the standard. And as we go down through the ages and through the kings and the prophets into the New Testament, we're going to see that David is the standard to be measured as a king and as a leader. So, and we know David wasn't perfect, right? We saw his mistakes. We saw he screwed up. But he always came back to God with a heart that was meek and ready to do whatever he had to do to be good with God. So it says, "If thou wilt walk before me as David thy father walked, in the integrity of heart and in uprightness, to do according to all that I have commanded thee, and will keep my statutes and my judgments, then I will establish the throne of the kingdom upon Israel forever, as I promised to David thy father, saying, There shall not fail thee a man upon the throne of Israel." Now, you know, it says here, David walked in integrity of heart and in uprightness, to do according to all that I've commanded. You know, David did that. Did he make mistakes? Yeah, but he walked in integrity of heart. And, you know, when he made a mistake, he admitted it. So, it's an interesting thing to think about. Anyway. Verse 5. "Then I will establish the throne of thy kingdom upon Israel forever, as I promised David thy father, saying, There shall not fail thee a man upon the throne of Israel. But if ye shall at all turn from following me, ye or your children, and will not keep my commandments and my statutes, which I have set before you, but go and serve other gods and worship them, then I will cut off Israel out of the land which I have given them. And this house which I have hallowed for my name, I will cast out of my sight. And Israel shall be a proverb and a byword among people." Wow, that's pretty stiff penalty, I guess. I don't know. But, you know, when you read this, one thing we can say about David, he never turned to another god. You know, he never worshipped another. He got tricked. He got sucked into, the sensual side of life at times. He got carried away with himself a couple of times in his own power, but he never worshipped another god. He never turned from God. And when he was confronted, he just turned back. Okay, verse 8. And at this house which is high, everyone that passeth by it shall be astonished and shall hiss. And they shall say, why hath the Lord done thus unto this land and to this house? And they shall answer, because they forsook the Lord their God, who brought forth their fathers out of the land of Egypt, and have taken hold upon other gods, and have worshipped them and served them. Therefore hath the Lord brought upon them all this evil. You know, looking back, it's easy for us to say, boy, what a bunch of jerks. But, you know, we get tricked too sometimes. And we get enticed by stuff. And it's not always just, you know, it should be easy, but it's not always easy. But, you know, anyway. Of course, they couldn't speak in tongues. You know, we always have God with us, and we always know that God is with us because we can speak in tongues. We always know that we're born again. We always know that we have those promises. And our promises are not conditional. So we could screw it up worse than them and still not lose it, which is great in one respect. Anyway, verse 10. And it came to pass at the end of 20 years, when Solomon had built the two houses, the house of the Lord and the king's house. So it took him 20 years to build the temple, and at the same time he was building his own house, so he was pretty busy. Now Hiram, the king of Tyre, had furnished Solomon with cedar trees and fir trees and with gold, according to all his desire. That then King Solomon gave Hiram 20 cities in the land of Galilee. And Hiram came out of Tyre to see the cities which Solomon had given him, and they pleased him not. And he said, what cities are these which thou hast given me, my brother? And he calleth them land of Kabul unto this day. I don't know what that means. And look, oh, yeah. Dirty or displeasure. Okay. These places are dirt. And Hiram sent to the king six talents of gold. And this is the reason of the levy which King Solomon raised for to build the house of the Lord and his own house, and Milio and the wall of Jerusalem, and Hazar and Megiddo and Gezer. For Pharaoh, king of Egypt, had gone up and taken Gezer and burned it with fire and slain the Canaanites that dwelt in the city, and had given it for a present unto his daughter Solomon's wife. Remember, Solomon had a wife, and it was Pharaoh's daughter. So Solomon built Gezer and Beth Horon, the nether, and Baalath, and so on and so forth. Let's jump down to verse 22. But the children of Israel did Solomon make no bondmen, but they were men of war, and his servants, and his princes, and his captains, and his rulers of chariots and horsemen. These were the chief of the officers that were Solomon's work, 550, which bear rule over the people that wrought in the work. And it goes on and it tells you about all those people. So now we're just going to jump down to chapter 10. And this is, chapter 9 is paralleled by 2 Chronicles 8. And chapter 10 of 1 Kings is 2 Chronicles 9. 1 through 12. Okay? If you want to look them up. There's not really a big difference in what it tells that I could see. But verse 10, or chapter 10, verse 1. And when the queen of Sheba heard of the fame of Solomon concerning the name of the Lord, she came to prove him with hard questions. In the Septuagint, it says, to try him with riddles. She wanted to see how smart he was. And she came to Jerusalem with a very great train, with camels that bear rich spices and very much gold and precious stones. And when she was come to Solomon, she communed with him of all that was in her heart. Okay, Sheba. Well, let's read a little more and then I'll talk about her. So she communed with him with all her heart, and Solomon told her all questions. There was not anything hid from the king which he told her not. And when the queen of Sheba had seen all Solomon's wisdom and the house that he had built and the meal of his table and the sitting of his servants and the attendance of his ministers and their apparel and his cupbearers and his ascent by which he went up unto the house of the Lord, there was no more spirit in her. Wow. That means it took her breath away. In the Septuagint, it says she was utterly amazed. In the NIV, it says she was overwhelmed. If you hold your place here and go to Matthew 12, there's one mention of this queen. Well, it's here and it's in Luke. We'll just look at Matthew because it's the same record. 42. In Matthew 12, 42. Actually, let's read start in verse 38. And then certain of the scribes of the Pharisees answered, saying, Master, they were speaking to Jesus Christ, we would see a sign from thee. But he answered and said unto them, an evil and adulterous generation seeketh after a sign, and there shall no sign be given to it but the sign of the prophet Jonas. For as Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the whale's belly, so shall the Son of Man be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. The men of Nineveh shall rise up in judgment with this generation and shall condemn it, because they repented at the preaching of Jonah, and behold, a greater than Jonah is here. The queen of the south shall rise up in judgment of this generation. Queen of the south is Sheba, queen of Sheba. For she came from the uttermost parts of the earth to hear the wisdom of Solomon, and behold, a greater than Solomon is here. So, go back to Kings. So, Sheba. Nobody is quite sure where Sheba was. Some scholars say she was a Sabean, also the queen of Yemen. Ethiopian legend claims her, and it is said that Candace of Ethiopia in Acts points to the ancient belief in the true God going back to this meeting of the queen and Solomon. If so, she made a long and difficult journey of about 1,200 miles by camel. So, because it's, if you look at a map, it doesn't look like it's that far, but it's a long way. 1,200 miles thereabouts. Which, if we hop in the car and drive to Florida, it's maybe 2 days, 2 days and a half. You stay at a nice hotel. But when you're traveling on camel through the deserts and across rivers and mountains and you have to set up tents every night, it's not an easy journey. Anyway, that's the Queen of Sheba. So, where were we? Verse 5. So, when she saw all the greatness of Solomon's court, when she saw how beautiful everything was and how his servants were and how he handled himself, we would say today it blew her away, right? She couldn't believe it. And she said to the king, it is a true report that I have heard in my own land of the acts of thy wisdom. Howbeit, I believe not the words. All these reports were coming to her of how rich this guy was and how wise he was and how incredible he was. She said, I don't believe this. So, I believe not the words until I came and mine eyes had seen it. And behold, the half was not told me. So, usually when people come back and tell you something, they usually exaggerate. And when you go see, you go, well, yeah, it's great, but it's not as what they said. Here she's saying it was twice as much as what they said. It wasn't half of what told me. Thy wisdom and thy prosperity exceedeth the fame which I heard. Happy are thy men, happy are thy these thy servants, which stand continually before thee and hear thy wisdom. In the, I think in the Septuagint, I don't think I wrote it down. It says, happy are his wives also. Anyway, because he had wives. Blessed be the Lord thy God, which delighteth in thee, to set thee on the throne of Israel, because the Lord loved Israel forever. Therefore he made thee king to do judgment and justice. And she gave the king 120 talents of gold, and of spices very great store, and precious stones. And there came no more such abundance of spices as these which the queen of Sheba gave to the king Solomon. So, you know, if you think about, we're going to read a little more here, but if you think about how Solomon got all the wealth and the riches in Israel, well, because God enriched him. And how did he do it? He was, you know, God blessed his life and gave him wisdom and all this stuff and told him what to do. And people were so amazed, they just brought him stuff. They brought him gold, they brought him jewels, they brought him animals, as we'll see. Because in verse 11 it says, and the navy also of Hiram that brought gold from Ophir. What was the name of, I'm trying to think. I didn't write this down either. Anyway, there was a group of people back then, I forget what they were called. They were traders, they were merchants, and they had ships, and they went all over the Mediterranean. And that's where Hiram was part of. And the navy also of Hiram that bought gold from Ophir brought in from Ophir great plenty of almug trees and precious stones. I looked up almug trees, and nobody knows what they are. So, and the king made the almug tree pillars for the house of the Lord and for the king's house, harps also and psalteries for the singers. There came no such almug trees nor were seen unto this day. And king, whatever they were, and yeah, whatever. And King Solomon gave unto the queen of Sheba all her desire, whatsoever she asked, beside that which Solomon gave her of his royal bounty. So she turned and went to her own country, she and her servants. So she got her fill. She got her all her questions answered. Isn't that wild? You know, you hear about somebody like that and you say, oh man, I got all these questions. You go to them and they answer them all. That's pretty great. And King Solomon made 200 targets of beaten gold. 600 shekels of gold went to one target. And he made 300 shields of beaten gold. 3 pounds of gold went into one shield. And the king put them in the house of the forest of Lebanon. Moreover, the king made a great throne of ivory and overlaid it with the best gold. And the throne had 6 steps, and the top of the throne was bound round behind, and there were stays on either side on the place of the seat. Stays would have been like armrests. Mm-hmm. That's what that is. And 2 lions stood beside the stays. I don't think they were real lions. I think they were carved. And 12 lions stood there on one side and on the other upon the 6 steps. There was not the like made in any kingdom. So his throne was the most beautiful and most incredible throne. And all King Solomon's drinking vessels were of gold. And all the vessels of the house of the forest of Lebanon were of pure gold. I guess that was his vacation home. And none of were of silver. It was nothing accounted of in the days of Solomon. Meaning silver was, you know, of no account. It was, you know, not didn't have any real worth. For the king had a navy at sea, a navy of Tarshish with the navy of Hiram. Once in 3 years came the navy of Tarshish bringing gold and silver, ivory and apes and peacocks. So King Solomon exceeded all the kings of the earth for riches and for wisdom. Isn't that wild, huh? What a thing. And all the earth sought to Solomon to hear his wisdom, which God had put in his heart. Now, all the earth means what? Doesn't mean, you know, it means all the people in the known world that were, which would have been around the Mediterranean and the Middle East, you know, Persia, maybe even as far as India, who knows. But all the earth sought to Solomon to hear his wisdom, which God had put in his heart. You know, when it goes back to God, right? It wasn't Solomon, it was God. He had asked God, and God gave it to him. If it wasn't for God, he would have had nothing. And they brought every man his present, vessels of silver and vessels of gold and garments and armor, spices, horses, mules, a rate year by year. And Solomon gathered together chariots and horsemen, and he had 1,400 chariots and 12,000 horsemen, whom he bestowed in cities for chariots and with the king at Jerusalem. And the king made silver to be in Jerusalem as stones, and cedars made he to be as sycamore trees that are in the vale for abundance. Okay, sycamore trees are not what we call sycamore trees. It's called a sycamore fig. It bears fruit. And they had groves of, or orchards of these trees. So they were in abundance. And so also the cedar trees, which were, you know, a valuable wood. Cedars are, what are they? They're naturally repellent to bugs and rot. So, and Solomon had horses brought out of Egypt and linen yarn, and the king's merchants received the linen yarn at a price. You know, they got the best price. And a chariot came up and went out of Egypt for 600 shekels of silver and a horse for 150. And so for all the kings of the Hittites and for the kings of Syria, they did bring them out by their means. So, where are we here? Huh. Well, we're going to go a little more. So chapter 11. Okay. Do you remember when we studied David and he went in unto Bathsheba? And then we looked and there was no record of that in Chronicles, right? And we talked about how Kings is from man's point of view, Chronicles is from God's point of view. Well, okay. So chapter 11, we read the first verse. But King Solomon loved many strange women, together with the daughter of Pharaoh, women of the Moabites, the Ammonites, the Edomites, the Zidianites, and the Hittites, of the nations concerning which the Lord said unto the children of Israel, ye shall not go in unto them, neither shall they come in unto you, for surely they will turn away your heart after their gods. And Solomon clave unto these in love. Wow. That's something, isn't it? So, you know, alien or strange or alien or not Israelites, they were Gentiles. And chapter 2 is a statement of God's standard, you know. God said, you shall not go into them. That was God's, that was it. That was where he drew the line. Then it says in verse 3, and he had 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines, and his wives turned away his heart. 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines. That's a lot. Well, so, you know, think about this. The essence or the core of a good man-woman relationship should be God. Right. Each one encouraging the other to worship God and to stand for God and to believe God. Unbelievers have a different priority and they have a tendency to pull a believer away from God. That's why even in the New Testament, God encourages us to be married to believers, right? Yeah, now it says, you know, if a believer is married to an unbeliever and it doesn't affect them and they be happy to stay with them, fine. But if they leave, let them leave. Okay? So these unbelieving wives turned away his heart. It didn't happen overnight. You know, it just didn't. First of all, he didn't just have 700 wives from one day to the next. And he started collecting these. He got Pharaoh's daughter, and he's collecting them. And probably some of these concubines were gifts from other people, you know, whatever. And so over a period of time, you know, they turned his heart away. You know, you can imagine what he went through, how slowly his commitment and his heart for God got eroded. You know, why don't you do this for my, you built this beautiful temple for your God. Why don't you do something for my God? Why can't you do this, Solomon? I mean, it must have drove him crazy. So finally, his heart was turned away. Now, it's interesting to note the things that Solomon wrote. So I want you to go to Proverbs chapter 3. Of course, Solomon wrote Proverbs, right? We read that before, the Solomons of Proverbs. He didn't read them all, wrote them all, but he wrote most of them, or a bunch of them. And in Proverbs chapter 3, verse 1, it says, "My son, forget not my law, but let thine heart keep my commandments. For length of days and long life and peace shall they add to thee. Let not mercy and truth forsake thee. Bind them about thy neck, write them upon the table of thine heart. So shall thy find favor and good understanding in the sight of God and man. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart, and lean not to thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths." Solomon wrote this, right? And yet these women turned him away. Let's go to chapter 4 of Proverbs. Verse 20. "My son, attend to my words, incline thine ear to my sayings. Let them not depart from thine eyes. Keep them in the midst of thine heart." They turned his heart away, right? Yet he understood what heart meant. He wrote these proverbs. "Let them not depart from thine eyes. Keep them in the midst of thine heart. For they are life unto those that find them, and health to all their flesh. Keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. Put away from thee a froward mouth and perverse lips. Put far from thee, let thine eyes look right on, and let thine eyelids look straight before thee." And so on and so on. And then chapter 5 of Proverbs. "My son, attend to my wisdom, and bow thine ear to my understanding." Now, he was the wisest man in the world. People came to him from all over. And where did the wisdom come from?
God.
From God. And yet he let these women, and it's because he disobeyed God's rule and commandment. He had all these women, and finally, eventually, they turned his heart. He said, "My son, attend to my wisdom, and bow thine ear to my understanding, that thou mayest regard discretion, and that the lips may keep knowledge. For the lips of a strange woman drop as an honeycomb, and her mouth is smoother than oil, but her end is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death, her steps take hold on hell." So he knew about this, right? He knew about this. He understood it, and yet he allowed his heart to be turned. So,
look at verse 8. "Keep your way far from her, and do not go near the door of her house."
Yeah. Well, he had them in his house, and he built houses for them. And he built, as we're going to see later on, he built stuff for them, which is kind of crazy in itself. So I think we'll stop there, and we'll pick it up in 11, verse 4, next week. And we'll see how these women turned his heart and what the effect was. But it's really amazing when you think about Solomon and how committed he was, how wonderful he was. And then these women turned his heart. You know, he just turned it from God. And when he was doing that prayer and that dedication, he talked about, you know, having a heart all your heart and all your soul to follow God and things like that. It's just amazing. So anyway, that's where we're going to stop tonight. So Father God, we thank you for your love and your grace. We thank you for your great word. And you know, it's just amazing what you do and how loving you are and how forgiving you are and what you'll do for a person when they turn to you. So we just thank you, God, that we can turn to you. We can ever keep in mind your love and your grace and how you've given us the best way to live. And if we stick to it, we're just going to see great things happen. So we thank you for that. We thank you for your son, Jesus Christ, again, and how you so loved us that you sent him. And it's in his name we pray. Amen.